the offside rule. We get it. Brought to you by a Wolves fan, a Manchester United fan, and a Liverpool fan.
Hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Offside Rule podcast. It's myself, Lindsay Hooper, joined once again by Hayley McQueen and Kate Borsay. I feel like my intro should have a Bayesian accent, but you know me and accents, Kate.
Well, I'm definitely not giving it a go.
I've got to say as well, by the way, underneath all these layers of clothes, there is a tan and there are white marks somewhere.
I've seen Lindsay Hooper's feet, Hayley. They are a sickening sight.
It's just not fair, but then again, Lindsay, you'll be covered up for the next couple of months anyway.
I know. My cashmere jumper's back on, keeping me warm. This is what we're going to talk about this week, girls. As I come back, we're going to go down to the Championship for topic number two. We all saw Reading's 7-1 thrashing over Bolton, so that's got us thinking about different results in the Championship because it's one of those leagues which is so unpredictable, and it's proving to be so this season as well. And then for topic three, we're talking 100 reasons why we love. Manchester City got 100 goals at the weekend, which was such an achievement. So we're actually going to ask about other centuries in football. It doesn't have to be centurions, but other 100s in football. But we will start with mixed messages and a Manchester United news story again. Hayley, Manchester United are just going to be in the news every week.
Such a shame. We used to sort of seeing the back page headlines where it's all just positive and Fergie going on a rampage, but no, it's just doom and gloom. Well, I don't think the Chelsea result was a massive surprise. I went into it thinking, well, it's Stamford Bridge, it's Chelsea, it's Mourinho. He's going to just be absolutely loving this because we all know he wanted the Manchester United job. So it's just to prove a point, really. You know, if I were your manager, this could be the other way around. But it was really disappointing. But I think actually completely expected, unfortunately.
So this is the contradiction that we're asking for topic one, because off the back of that result, Vidic came out after that red card as well, stupid. He came out afterwards and said, right, the title race is over, to which David Moyes responded in his post-match and said, we're not ruling it out. So it's a complete contradiction within the club. Yeah. So I want two more examples of great player-manager contradictions, starting, as always, with Hayley McQueen.
I have two stories, one from my personal family timeline and the other from a young man who made his move to the Premier League just last year. The first is my dad, who played for Leeds United and back in the day had promised he would stay faithful to his manager. He played under Clough for a little while as well, but was at Leeds, promised that he would be staying there. But the rivalry was very, very much at the heart of things back then in the 70s between Leeds United and Manchester United. We know that's pretty much gone now. There's still a rivalry there, but they don't really play each other in similar competitions. Back then, it was the days when Manchester United were below Leeds United and not achieving as much. So he made the move from Leeds to Manchester United, having promised his manager that he wasn't going to do exactly what his best friend Joe Jordan had done just a few days before, and hopped it across the M62 to the northwest. And he'd said he wouldn't be leaving Leeds United. He did an interview, and I wonder if it was with Martin Tyler, I can't actually remember, but it was with Granada Television, and it was with Yorkshire Television, I should say, Granada over the other way, which was there when he was going to do lots of interviews, but it was Yorkshire TV, came down to the training grounds. It was exactly the same back then in this 77-78 season, where us reporters were going down and harassing the players to ask exactly what was happening. And back then they did actually stop and were polite and gave an interview, and he said, no, absolutely, I'm here for the future, I'm here to stay. And of course a couple of days later he went to Manchester United. So when he hates the fact that Leeds United fans hate him, I say, well, it's not really surprising when you say that you're loyal to the club and then of course you leave. The other, on a similar topic, is Mesut Ozil. Do you remember the headlines back in August? He wasn't massively linked with a move to Arsenal. However, people thought that this could potentially happen. Nobody at Real Madrid did. I was speaking to my friend Kay Murray at Real Madrid TV and said the move of Ozil to Arsenal, she said, was probably the most shocking in her time because they just didn't expect it to happen. Neither did the papers. Headline in the Telegraph, Mesut Ozil, the Real Madrid midfielder, denied suggestion he's going to leave the club. The Guardian, Arsenal rejected again after Ozil opts to stay at Real Madrid, with Mesut Ozil saying it's a pleasure and honour to play for Real Madrid. And he pretty much said, I'm not going anywhere. The Daily Mail, Ozil has declared his determination to fight for his future at Real Madrid and dismissed interest from Manchester United and from Arsenal. Headlines a few days later in the Mirror, a steal, a bargain, £42 million for the former Real Madrid player. And Mourinho at the time, of course, wasn't happy to lose him. I wasn't happy to lose him to an English side either. It's just kind of funny, isn't it, when this time of year, particularly January and August, when we've got the transfer deadline looming, you hear from players who promise their managers and they have discussions about, you know, their future, and the managers then, OK, I'll buy into this. Mourinho coming out saying Ozil is not going anywhere because the players told him he's not going anywhere. And then they all look silly at the end of the day, apart from Arsenal, who've gained a great player.
Let's move on to yours then, Kate. Who have you got first?
Well, I'm going to deal with a serial contradictor, Mr. John Terry. If you ever want someone to stir up trouble in your team or contradict you as a manager, by John Terry, he's your man. He had a bit of a fractured relationship in the end with Fabio Capello. A more recent example towards the end of Capello's reign was Capello saying that it was tiredness that caused the England team to struggle in their qualifying draw against Switzerland to try and get to the European Championships. It said in the report at the time, manager Capello yesterday blamed the sloppy performance on fatigue, with many of his side having played more than 50 games this season. What does Terry do? In Mr. Contradictory fashion, he said, we're certainly not going to come out here and use an excuse like that. We've had 50, 60 games this year, so another game's not going to make any difference at all. Well done, John Terry. But there's a history of contradiction with John Terry. Let's rewind a bit to the World Cup in 2010. Now, we all know that there was a bit of a to-do with John Terry and Stephen Gerrard, and there's one kind of tussle, really. No out-and-out contradictions as such, but that didn't stop Terry from contradicting the England manager. Forget about the England captain, he'll just do the England manager instead. Now, England were at that tricky stage in the World Cup when it looked like they would struggle to get past the group stages. They needed to beat Slovenia. And Terry came out in front of the press and really overstepped the mark and just said, you know, look, if we can't be honest with each other, then there's no point in us being here. And he tried to rally the senior players together to meet Capello to try and assess what was going wrong with the team. He came out and made another contradiction. Terry, at the time, rejected Capello's notion that the side was gripped by anxiety. That's a little bit insulting, Terry said, because we're not. Yet he admitted that they needed to relax more. So he decides to get the players together. And Terry said, look, let's get everyone together, have a beer and speak to the manager. Let's just switch off. So he's basically saying, look, you know, Capello isn't allowing us to switch off and I'm going to do something about it.
Have a beer under Capello. My goodness. Outrage. Outrage. Didn't let them do anything, did he?
Well, at that time, Capello did let them relax, apparently. And John Terry and a few other senior players were allowed a beer. And apparently Capello sat there with a bottle of red wine. Oh. Guzzling away.
The thing I'm noticing in your case here about John Terry is it's all England-related matters. See, I think he was contradictory for England, but not for Chelsea. He seems to, especially under Mourinho, I mean, he's got a great relationship with Mourinho.
That wasn't the last time that Terry contradicted himself during that World Cup. Remember Joe Cole? Just couldn't really buy a game, could he, to start off with? And Terry said at that time that only Joe Cole and Wayne can open up defences, very much trying to urge Capello to put Joe Cole on. He then said, it is the manager's decision. Although Joe is one of the best players in the country, he's come back from an injury and showed great form for Chelsea. So pretty much telling Capello to choose Joe Cole. He then thought he'd do a bit of argy-bargy against Chelsea as well, a rare moment then for him. And he said, look, it still amazes me how the club have come to the conclusion of letting Joe go. So if it wasn't enough contradicting Fabio Capello, he's also contradicting the line of the club as well in criticising them for letting Joe Cole go. Mr. Contradiction, John Terry.
I'm going to start with, just to make everyone feel a little bit better about the Vidic-Moyes situation, to remind everyone that within Manchester United, it wasn't just Vidic and Moyes, actually Ferguson had a few contradictions. And the one towards the latter end of his reign at Manchester United was with Wayne Rooney. So not many have dared to contradict Fergie over the years, but when Wayne Rooney was omitted from the side to face Sunderland and Valencia back in 2010, he denied that, unlike what Sir Alex Ferguson was claiming, that he had an ankle injury. You might remember this. He told the press, I've had no problems with my ankle at all this season. I've been training for the last 2 months. I haven't missed a training session, so there's no problem with my fitness. Now, in the press, there were rumours rumours at the time. It was all to do with the prostitute scandal to do with Wayne Rooney, and that Fergie was towing the line and that he was going to be missing for about 3 weeks. And we didn't know exactly why, but that was rumoured in the press. But to make matters even worse, he then got selected by Fabio Capello to play against Montenegro and did the full 90 minutes. Yeah. It was a complete contradiction from those two. I was going to pick a famous Tevez incident, you know, the bench warming yes. incident when him and Mancini came to blows because apparently he said he wouldn't play for Manchester City off the bench. And then Mancini comes out and says, well, you'll never play here again. Contradiction, because he did. He did, didn't he? But I thought we'd go for a similar one to that, but back in 2005. And I always remember this and thinking that Craig Bellamy, that he was a bit of trouble as a player, but he'd since won me over, actually.
He used to be.
But Graeme Souness and Craig Bellamy came to blows. The striker, he's had a history of run-ins with his previous managers, hasn't he? But his biggest feud probably was this one with the Newcastle boss at the time. He asked him to play out of position in right midfield, did Souness, and Bellamy apparently flatly refused, a little bit like the Tevez incident. He then came out in the press later and said, that's a complete lie, but called the manager a liar. So we'll never know the truth behind that, but the £80,000 fine that Bellamy got might insinuate that he might have been the fibber instead.
Hi, I'm Eddie Jenkins from TalkSport.
Yeah, and I'm Paul Hawksby from TalkSport.
And you're listening to the Offside Rule podcast.
On to topic number two, and we're going down the league to the Championship, which I wish I could say Wolves were involved in, but of course they're not. They might come up in part of this topic. We're looking for topsy-turvy teams, because the Championship, it's one of those leagues, isn't it? I mean, at the moment, this season, any of 10 possibly could go down, any of 10 could go up. So let's look at a few results and look at a few different bits from the Championship that over the years made us smile. Perhaps more recently, if we can. I know that, Kate, you were going to go for last season, but Hayley, you've got something more recent.
I've gone for Barnsley, who are sitting at the foot of the table. They're in real, real trouble. They're a team that shouldn't be in real trouble. They've actually got some real class players for them. They finished below average last season and they're doing terribly. Gary Flitcroft, their manager, left the club in turmoil, but they now have a new manager. And it's a manager who left the club 15 years ago, Danny Wilson, appointed for the second time. So he's come in to try and save the club because they had a woeful start to the season. Yes, maybe you would expect on the opening day of the season that they would get beaten by Wigan. Wigan, of course, who've dropped down the leagues as well, but beaten 4-0. Ridiculous. Beaten 5-2 by Blackburn as well. They've had some really heavy defeats. They were at home and lost to Watford by 5-1. They've only actually had 3 home wins all season. The only side that have done worse than them is Yeovil, who are above them in the season but have a better away record. But it's a hometown. It's a small town, I should say. And Barnsley need the football club to do well to help the town. A bit like my hometown, Middlesbrough. You know, when the football club isn't doing so well, the town just doesn't quite have the excitement factor. You need the money and the fans coming in to bring, you know, and regenerate the area, which has happened at Middlesbrough. So it's a real shame that this hasn't happened at Barnsley. But they have had some absolutely terrible defeats away from home. They have, however, drawn to Leeds, and Leeds were in a bit of a sticky situation at that time, and they managed to hold them, and it was a really strong Leeds side that were put out on that day. They held Birmingham then. Of course, they had that really terrible defeat at the beginning of the season, but they managed to hold it together. So their new manager has come in and trying to turn things around. They had a good win over Blackpool. Again, that wasn't expected, but with the situation with Paul Ince going out, okay, maybe they were up against a club who were in a little bit of turmoil themselves without a manager.
But it's one of those situations as well, isn't it, where it's that point in the season now where draws aren't really enough for Barnsley. They need wins. If you're going to play 3 games, 1 win is better than 2 draws, isn't it?
But you'd like to think that the managers who succeed in a second spell at a club, like you've got Jose Mourinho, Nigel Pearson's at Leicester at the moment, Billy Davis at Nottingham, Eddie Howe, there's a really long list of managers who've gone back to a club and they're kind of clutching at the times gone by when they were originally there and they did achieve great things. And I think it's good that the club have taken a punt and brought Danny Wilson back, knowing that he is kind of a player's manager as well.
Well, that's our most recent example. Myself and Kate Borsay have both gone with last season, and the Championship was quite a battle last year as well. What have you got?
Well, I'm going to start with a result right from near the beginning of last season, August 2012. And this is maybe not significant at that time, but certainly significant when you look at what happened to both teams at the end of the season. R. Sean Thorne, who does the Twitter Topic of the Week and is also editor of this podcast as well, his beloved Bristol City notched up a fantastic result against Crystal Palace back in August 2012, beating them 4-1.
But at the end of the season, Bristol City were relegated bottom of the league and Palace were promoted. The teams now sit two divisions apart. Bristol City struggling in League One as Palace are finding things difficult in the Premier League.
Did you get that, Sean? Relegated, struggling. She's just hamming it home. But you did win 4-1.
It's all right, Sean. There's a Wolves one coming up in a minute. And that got me thinking about 4-1 results last year. 4-1 results, or 1-4, however you term it. And there are an awful lot of them. There was a spate of results. In fact, if you were a betting person, you'd want to have a go at 4-1 on quite a few of the games. On the 3rd of November alone, there were three games that ended 4-1. Forest losing to Millwall 4-1. Charlton Athletic losing to Middlesbrough 4-1. Derby County beating Blackpool 4-1. But to beat that, on the 1st of December, just under a month later, there were four 4-1 results all on the same day. Wow. There was an epidemic of 4-1s. And most of those results went pretty much the way that you think that they would. Although this time, Sean, Bristol City on the losing end of Wolverhampton Wanderers, Lindsay Hooper. Although the score was 4-1 to Wolves, both teams ended up getting relegated.
Wow, look at this at the moment. Do you remember that result just at the beginning of January? Big game between Leicester and Derby County. Leicester going for that promotion push. 4-1.
What is it about 4-1?
The omens. I think they could be getting promoted. I think we'll keep an eye on that.
Promoted or relegated if you look at Bristol City and Wolves.
I'm going to put all my house on the fact that Leicester won't get relegated. How about that?
I think so too, yeah. Let's just pull out a quick large result from the 10th of November last season. Watford beating Leeds United 6-1. Now, Watford may have finished in the playoffs and Leeds may have finished mid-table. So not an awful lot between them. But at that time, only 3 points separated those teams. So you've got to think, teams 3 points apart and one of them beats the other one 6-1.
Okay, well, last season for me, there was one weekend that summed up the topsy-turvy nature of the Championship, and it happened on the last weekend in March. So it was a late kickoff game at the City Ground, Nottingham Forest, and it was just after Billy Davis returned to the club. So everyone's waiting for his arrival. And I remember this because I was reporting that day and news filtered through. Do you remember this? That bottom of the table, Peterborough had scored two late penalty kicks and beat leaders Cardiff. Do you remember that? So I remember those results coming in. What I didn't recall from going through on the internet and just looking at that weekend, because it came to mind, did you know that all nine of the top teams in the Championship that weekend, none of them could get a win? No. None of them from the top nine. So it was just one of those weekends that sums up the Championship and what can happen, a little bit like what you've both said, bottom beating top, 4-1 scorelines that go the other way. It's just one of those leagues and you can't ever sum it up. And Billy Davis afterwards was asked about it because he was the man of the moment joining Forest again. And he was asked about all the strange results. And his analysis was, it's the Championship. It's not even more unpredictable this time around, was the journalist's question. No, not at all. It is what it is. It's just the Championship. Every single season, it's the same. A coat of paint doesn't separate top from bottom. Love that quote.
Yeah, this sums it up as well. Middlesbrough are actually doing not too bad now under new manager Aito Karanka from Real Madrid. They lost to Barnsley. They managed to put three past Middlesbrough. So it just shows you, doesn't it? This Barnsley side are really struggling, still managed to beat my Middlesbrough. This is the Middlesbrough side who at the beginning of the season were knocked out of the Capital One Cup by Accrington Stanley.
Your adopted team.
That is my adopted team, yeah.
Well, talking of weird results between our adopted teams, my adopted team, Oxford, the team of my childhood, of course have been playing Charlton, who is my local team at the moment. Yeah. So this is when loyalties divide, don't they?
Thank you very much for that. We mentioned Sean Thorne there, and it's time to hand over to him for this week's Twitter Topic of the Week.
Twitter Topic of the Week.
Cheers for that, guys. Sean Thorne here, and cheers to Kate for the Bristol City shout-out. Just to add to the 4-1 victory over Palace that season, if that wasn't topsy-turvy enough, we did Cardiff 4-2 the following week as well. Good times back then. Now look at the state of us. Anyway, this week's Twitter Topic of the Week, inspired by a tweet from Casey, who said, how is Bakuna getting paid to play football? He can't pass, he can't tackle or do anything of any quality. Hashtag awful. So our Twitter topic of the week this week is who's stealing a living playing football. Now, Keith Browning's gone for Zat Knight at Bolton. He said he was seen laughing at Stoke when Bolton were relegated from the Prem. Hashtag no respect, hashtag no quality. Absolutely hate it when players are seen chuckling during a relegation. It's just about showing some respect to the fans who invest heavily, both financially and emotionally, into a team who are obviously going to be gutted with the relegation. If you don't care, that's fine, but save your chuckles for the dressing room. Mike Kay's gone for Jamie O'Hara, enough said. Alistair Neal's gone for Adebayor and Berbatov. Unless there's a transfer window around the corner, then they pull their fingers out. It's a fair point. Adebayor has been scoring for fun recently, almost unplayable, in fact. 5 goals since Sherwood brought him back into the side, with a brace last weekend against Swansea as well. Love this one from the Black Prince. He says, if Emmanuel Frimpong was as active on the pitch as he is on Twitter, then he'd be an amazing player. It's a great Frimpong moment, actually. YouTube him on Soccer AM with Lethal Bizzle. Very, very chuckle-worthy. Charlie Harris has gone for Liam Ridgewell. He's been stealing a living as a Premier League footballer for many years now. Hashtag donkey. And Natasha Henry has gone for Titus Bramble and Stephen Fletcher. That's it for Twitter Topic of the Week this week. I'll be back next week. I've been Sean Thorne, and I'll hand you back to the girls.
Thank you very much for that, Sean. And we were talking about players there that are stealing a living. Did you have any names you wanted to add to the pot there, girls?
No, I think I'll give it a rest, insulting players, for 1 week anyway.
Okay, we'll let you off. How about you, Hayley?
I think we do enough of that, don't we? We could be here for quite some time. We don't want to bore you. We've got some fun coming up, that's why.
Okay, well, you've got more that you can check out on our Twitter account, actually, because we had some more come in after the deadline. So have a look at our timeline at Offside Rule Pod for more. We'll move on to topic number three then. And as we know, wonderful stuff from Manchester City this season in terms of scoring goals. And it's not even ordinary goals, is it? I mean, some of the goals are absolutely sublime. Aguero, Negredo up front, wow. So no surprise when they hit the 100-goal tally. And it got us thinking of centuries in football. Now, I opened this net out to be very wide indeed, which didn't please Kate Borsay, because I said any century from football. So it could be centurions, it could be clubs, managers, anything at all. And I asked for 2 examples each.
She then said 2 examples in your lifetime. And I was like, oh my God, I'm old. I've already got a significant lifetime to look at these hundreds.
But not quite 100 yet. You haven't got your card from the Queen. Hayley, we'll start with yours.
Let's just go with a bit of a tedious link. Jose Mourinho, already 100 wins in charge of Chelsea. Who'd have thought? Hasn't that time flown round? His former player, Iker Casillas, 100 caps for Spain. Guess who has more caps than him? Landon Donovan of the United States. Yeah. Who'd have thought? So the man who was Spanish captain for such a long time, who did get those 100 caps, pipped by an American. What about Kaká, former Real Madrid player, of course? Things ended really badly for him there. He went there with Ronaldo, and there was a great kind of Galacticos new era. Things didn't go well for him. He had to go crawling back to his old side, AC Milan. He's already played 100 games there and doing very well indeed. It's as well 100 birthday. I'm going to focus on 2 things which have turned 100. I shouldn't say things. One of them is a lovely lady.
She celebrates.
Yes, the other is a football club.
So let's go for the first thing, the lady.
Okay, so this lovely lady, she's the oldest fan in world football.
Oh, is she? Does she look like the thing?
Oh, yeah,
she's lovely. She wears lovely pearls, gets dressed up still to go and watch her beloved Norwich. She's called Vera. She's followed them since last century. And the matches she went to, 1989th, when she filled 76 years. Since then, all the matches she's followed from home. So she's nearly been to see 2,000 matches, home and away, every competition. And Vera said, on my birthday, we all gathered and watched the match. It would have been nice if we'd have won. They didn't. But at least we played well. We deserved at least a point. But the United triumphed. Now, she has now taken the title as the official oldest fan on the planet. So in April 2013, unfortunately, saw the death of Maria Radilelli, known as Granny Inter. She died the day before her 114th birthday. So maybe it's football that will keep us young, girls.
Oh, we're going to have very long lives, girls. Kate?
Well, when I think about reaching milestones and players who notch up the records, perhaps more than others, I can't look any further than Steven Gerrard, really. As a Liverpool fan, of course, I'm always going to look to him. And he scored 100 Premier League goals. His 100th was a penalty in a 2-2 draw with Newcastle last October. So that's when he reached that milestone. His 100th goal for Liverpool, though, was in the Champions League against PSV Eindhoven back in 2008. And I was thinking, goodness me, I did think it was quite a long time for him to wait from scoring 100 for Liverpool and then 100 Premier League goals. He also, of course, became at that time England's sixth centurion. So talking about England players that have reached 100 caps since then, Ashley Cole's got his 100 caps. Frank Lampard's got his 100 caps. Before Gerrard, David Beckham was the most recent. And what I noticed when I was looking back at the stats, obviously Gerrard was only the sixth person to become a centurion, relatively few people. And you've got to go back then to Peter Shilton, further back to Bobby Moore, Billy Wright, Sir Bobby Charlton to look at the other players who've reached that century of caps.
Well, I'm going to step in now because this ties in exactly with what you're saying. I thought that it might have been quite predictable to go for Frank Lampard getting his 100th England cap, which you just mentioned.
Thanks.
No. Well, you went for Gerrard and you mentioned all the centurions there, but I thought, oh, I could have mentioned him just getting his 100th cap, but I looked for a different twist on the tale. So I've gone for a different angle on it. And let's go back to Roy Hodgson becoming the first England manager to field three centurions against Ukraine. So that's a different angle. So it was Frank Lampard who got his 100th cap on that night. But in doing so, Roy Hodgson, by playing him, also became the first England manager to have a team that featured three centurions, which also included Steven Gerrard, as you mentioned, and Ashley Cole, who at that time had both equaled Billy Wright's total of 105. Okay, well, Hayley's got more, so here we go.
He scores goals, Paul scores. He scores goals. There you go. Of course, Paul Scholes, member of the 100 Club, Premier League goals. He became the third Manchester United player in the same season to notch up 100 goals. The others, Ryan Giggs and Wayne Rooney. I didn't realise Wayne Rooney would have scored 100 goals. I think it's a huge achievement that for one club, three players reaching a milestone all within quick succession, and I was proudly there to witness it all.
And my second one, Hayley, I have a vague recollection of you may have mentioned this before, but just nod at me if you think that you've said this before.
Have another margarita. Go on.
It's still a great 100. Okay. So it's still fitting within the topic anyway. So goalkeepers scoring goals is a very rare sight. You'd think it would be impossible, wouldn't you, to find a story where a goalkeeper has netted 100 goals? No, one exists. Mm. And we're going over to Brazil for such a story. Step forward, Brazilian Rogério Ceni, with 111 goals now in total. Is this ringing a bell?
It is, yeah. I think I recognise the guy's name.
So 52 of those goals came from penalties.
I'm still enjoying the story, though, even though I have told this in a previous podcast.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to pass over to our team a link to the YouTube of his 100th goal, because although he scored 52 penalties, he was actually a free kick specialist. And the free kick he scores for his 100th goal would rival Suarez. Wow. It's brilliant. So this is a goalkeeper, remember. He plays for Sao Paulo. It was against rivals Corinthians, and his 100th goal went in on the 27th of March 2011. I will give the link. We'll get it up on our website as well, offsiderulepodcast.com. But also, just to wind this up, you'd think that Ceni would then retire. He's quite old, Ceni. He's 40 years old. That's not old, really. But he's 40. He thought he was going to retire, but has got convinced. So he's still playing for Sao Paulo in a 22nd season at the club. He has won nearly everything possible with them. The Brazilian Championship, the Sao Paulo Championship, the Club World Cup, more and more and more. So this goalkeeper is still going strong, and he could add more goals to that tally. Kate is looking at me like we're running out of time. So I'm going to head over for our foreign roundup of the week. And this one I'm handing over to Laura James.
Hello, girls. Since it's Janvier, I think it's time for a bit of mercato or transfer window gossip. Superfans of the French Newcastle United have stopped trying to force the hand of Rémi Caballé this month. The attacking midfielder is key to generating funds at Montpellier, a club in free fall since their championship title in 2012. President Louis Nicolin, however, has since managed to insult Newcastle upon Tynefolk and their personal hygiene, and added Caballé will go nowhere before the summer. Manchester City have spoken with Mino Raiola. He's the heavyweight agent in charge of Ibrahimovic and Paul Pogba, but on this occasion about Blaise Matuidi. The defensive midfielder can't sign a contract extension with Paris Saint-Germain due to an ongoing legal battle between his current and former agents. City can only expect to learn more about the player's availability at this stage, as he cannot enter in negotiations until the case is resolved. Nicolas Anelka has been in hot water following his offensive Quenelle gesture, although strangely posted a video in which the head of Jewish group CRIF say it's only seen as anti-Semitic if done in a Jewish location. There's been some giant killing on the field. Ligue 1 side Sochaux and SC Bastia have both been knocked out of the Coupe de France by second division teams, while a weekend Nice pulled off an outstanding 5-4 win over Marseille. Check out André Pierre-Gignac's double if you can.
Thanks very much for that. Good to have another foreign roundup on. And by the way, I wanted to point out that on our blog section, we've got a few new things coming in on our website, haven't we, Kate? Mm-hmm. OffsideRulePodcast.com. And our Bundesliga expert, Kate Partridge, there's a couple of blogs on there that she's done. She used to be our Russian correspondent. She's still based in Russia. There was a few things on there. I thought it'd be nice for people to go and check those out.
Yep, loads of new blogs coming up on the website too. So OffsideRulePodcast.com. Go have a look.
Thank you very much, girls. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye. The female take on football.